Hello and welcome to the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. Your host, Nick Fay. With me as always, Corey Waldron. What's up, Corey? Or should I say mustache Corey?
Yeah, I was about to say it's a new era. I have a mustache only for this podcast. I'm not sure what that means. I don't know if that's different than bearded Corey or no facial hair Corey. Maybe the takes will be different, but it's a different energy.
More of a dad take here. We got to get him a pair of Asics, tuck in his t-shirt. It will be good to go. But plenty of news to talk about today. As always, check out the outlet on iTunes, Block Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. But let's get right into the Jabari Parker situation. Obviously, rumors came out this week that he's going to be out of the rotation, that Bulls are looking for a trade for him in the offseason. He essentially signed a one-year deal for $20 million because the second year is a team option for $20 million. What were your thoughts on when you saw the Parker news he was out of the rotation and they're already looking to move on from him?
I was surprised by the fact that he was completely out of the rotation. I wouldn't have been as shocked if he was simply getting a minute reduction and they just weren't going to play him as much. We know how he has been on defense this year. I haven't thought he's been terrible offensively. Obviously, he needs the ball in his hands and he hasn't been an effective 3-point shooter this year. But definitely shocked just to know that, you know, what are we, 29 games in? He had 29 games to prove himself and he's already getting pretty much dealt. So to me, that was surprising, especially because he's only, you know, 23 years old. This is still a young kid.
Yeah, I mean, it was surprising, but I think some of the issues that we had in the pass room were kind of, you know, pop back up. You know, the report is his lack of effort on defense, doing the small things on offense, you know, effective screens, moving without the ball, just didn't work out. And I think that was some of the problems in Milwaukee. That was kind of the reasons he wasn't signed in the offseason, and it kind of just popped up again. So somewhat surprising because it is his hometown. You thought maybe he would bounce back, but not a surprise it didn't work out. It's really going to be interesting what is the next thing that happens with him, because obviously – you know, I don't think a team's trading for the talent. It's more so for the cap relief.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's tough. I think you definitely, if you're the teams that are going to be looking to acquire Jabari Parker, they're definitely going to be trying to shed an older guy with some cap money. But then at the same time, like, I'm perfectly okay with the right team, like a Cleveland Cavaliers team or even maybe the Miami Heat or the Phoenix Suns. One of these teams that are rebuilding to take a shot on. Because at the end of the day, he's still 23 years old. And who knows? You know, everybody kind of reacts differently to rough patches. I mean, we wrote off Derrick Rose, right? Numerous times we wrote off Derrick Rose. And granted, different scenario. He was already established. But he has really found a role again in the NBA in just the right system, in the right fit. And I still have hope for Parker. You know, two ACL injuries, that's, you know, a different story. But in defense, he just can't really move laterally. But I still see offensive glimpses where I think he could be a good rotational player. I'm not saying he's going to be a starter or a six man, but there is a place in the NBA for Jabari Parker to play somewhere between 20 and 25 minutes. I just think there is.
Yeah, I think the talent is definitely there offensively, like you mentioned. I think it's more of the mental aspect. You mentioned a team like Miami. I think that'd be perfect. Going to one of the bad teams, I think like Phoenix or Cleveland, that doesn't necessarily have a great culture, I don't know if he'll kind of learn his ways, but if he went to a solid team and they're like, all right, we'll give you a chance, but you have to improve in these areas for sure, then yeah, okay, I think Parker has a chance to get back to it. But team trading for Parker is going to be probably looking to give up a bad contract or something, because no one's really going to trade an asset for him at this time, in my opinion.
Is there any, I don't know if there's been any stories on this, is there any chance he gets bought out?
I would think so. I would think if, you know, a team can't find a trade for him, that he just ends up being bought out, because it just makes sense for him and it makes sense for Chicago as well. And it's been mentioned that he's handled the situation really well. He hasn't been, you know, overly aggressive, you know, yelling or screaming or anything. He's letting his agents kind of handle it and look for a team to kind of work a deal out.
Because, like, I mentioned this on Twitter, and I know you were extremely surprised to hear the words come out of my mouth, but if he's bought out, I would have really no issue with the Pacers taking a look at him.
And yeah, you know, I think a team like that would actually be okay. Like I said, with a team that has like culture, we know the Pacers have been winning for a while now. A team like the Heat have a good culture. I think a team that is able to kind of put him in a solid situation where there's other veterans around and make sure he stays on track, and they tell him, they lay it down for him, like, you have to play defense, you have to make the hustle plays, you have to do the small things.
Yeah, because I mean, just from being from the Pacers' perspective, yeah, we're playing really good basketball. The one thing this team lacks, the defense is top notch, is they still kind of lack an offensive scoring punch. And I don't know if Jabari Parker's necessarily the answer, but I would be completely okay with taking a flyer on, again, a 23-year-old.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit more intriguing if he's bought out. Then you don't have to worry about making the trade numbers work. You know, know, and then you could always buy him out if it doesn't work out at all.
Right.
So it is going to be something to keep an eye on. I like it looking at it from the cap relief perspective. If maybe a team was willing to, you know, this is like a Nets rumor that's been brought around and I don't necessarily advocate for it, but Allen Crabb for Jabari Parker, the Nets get off that $18 million. They can either keep Parker or they could buy him out right away. Now you just open up cap space for the summer.
You don't know where you stand on that? I feel like I'm shocked that you wouldn't be okay with that, especially with how Crabb's struggled so far this season.
You know, it's Crabb has actually really started to pick it up the last like few weeks. I think his last three games, he's like 13-21 from three. And since he's been inserted in the starting lineup, he's shooting over 40% from three. So Crabb's kind of picked it up. And like, I get it. It's, you know, you're going to open up $18 million more in cap space. But I also think there's a chance that maybe the Nets aren't going to be a big player in the offseason. They're just going to kind of keep the core they have and maybe sign a couple, you know, pretty good players, no superstars like KD or Kyrie Irving or anything like that. So I look at it from both ways. But I also, if the Nets did make that trade, I would almost want them to buy out Jabari Parker because I don't want him anywhere near the culture. And that's no disrespect to him. I just think everything he's done has kind of proved not to be a Nets player.
Just one more question following up on that. So do you think if, say, the Crabb-Parker trade does happen, do you think that's a lock that Sean Marks and the Nets are going to go all in on free agency?
I think it would probably mean that they would be willing to take a bigger chance in free agency, but either way, they're going to have a lot of cap space. And I think hypothetically, if they really wanted to, you know, move Crabb in the summertime, they could probably find some way to do it. He'd be $18 million expiring. You know, they could attach maybe a late first or second to him to get him moved, or maybe a young player or something. So I think it wouldn't like make me rush to move Crabb now. I think Sean Marks could do it either way. I think he could have a ton of cap space and go for big free agents, or he could just maneuver that cap space, take on some other deals, get more draft picks, or sign some lesser guys. You know, I honestly, I'm never surprised by Sean Marks because he's always open to so many different avenues.
Gotcha. Okay. I can see that.
So honestly, I'm not really sure. And also, this has been brought up too, is the Nets really love Allen Crabb, you know, the personality, the effort he puts in. And he has improved as a defender and he has picked up his game. Obviously, $18 million is still a lot for him. But I think the Nets aren't going to just like get rid of him and drop him. And also, shooters are extremely important in the Kenny Atkinson system. And the Nets are on a 4-game winning streak. So depending on what happens the rest of the year is going to kind of impact what they do too.
I can see that.
Anything else on Parker though, Corey?
I'm rooting for him.
Any other teams you think would be a good fit? You know, we mentioned Miami, Indiana, maybe, you know, I've seen people mention OKC, Charlotte. What do you think about those two?
Honestly, I see a lot of teams that are on the cusp and are in a tough position and trying to add talent. So I think the Hornets are a good option, possibly. Maybe the Detroit Pistons, who have been struggling on offense this year. I like OKC. Again, like all these scenarios, the Portland Trailblazers. A lot of these teams, I think it comes from whether or not he's bought out, because I just don't think any of these teams make a trade for him. But I think on the buyout market, there's going to be a lot of teams right on the cusp of possibly being a playoff team, or some of those top teams that are just, you know, tied by the luxury that are going to be interested in adding a guy like Parker. So again, you know, he's 23. He can't score offensively. The defense is the one question mark. And as you've mentioned several times, you put this guy in the right system where there's a culture established, like an OKC defensive culture, he could flourish alongside those guys. You really don't know.
Yeah, and I also think that maybe this would humble Parker a little bit, and I think that's what he needs. You know, being a high draft pick, having all those expectations, even signing a big deal this summer, he's still signed for $20 million a season. You know what I mean? So maybe if he's bought out, he'll kind of realize like, all right, I need to get everything together if I want to have a long NBA career.
Yeah, and also I just never want to hear the words "I didn't get paid to play defense" come out of his mouth again.
Yeah,
realistically, that's to me what has hurt his value the most, is that he's been so open about the fact that he doesn't give a damn about defense.
Yeah, and I think it's just that's an important thing for a championship team. So I think his, you know, interview or whatever he's going to do to sign with another team, or what his agents is going to communicate for him, needs to be that he's going to pick it up defensively and pick up the hustle aspect and the small things.
Agreed.
Now, moving on to one of maybe the strangest things that we've seen in the last year in terms of NBA trades. So Friday night, you know, we got a Woj bomb that there was a trade between the Grizzlies, the Wizards, and the Suns. You know, it would have sent Trevor Ariza and two Grizzly second-round picks to the Wizards, Washington's Kelly Oubre to Memphis, Washington guard Austin Rivers to Memphis, Wayne Selden to the Suns, and the Suns couldn't figure out if they're getting Marshawn Brooks or Dylan Brooks. They wanted Dylan Brooks. The Grizzlies say they've only included Marshawn. So there was this possibility at this three-way trade, but the Brooks got confused. What was your reaction when you saw this? Because this was just weird, funny, crazy. I don't even know how to explain it.
I mean, I was running the Twitter that night.
Yeah.
I believe. And it was kind of just came out of nowhere, like you said. I mean, and then what the best part was is there was the Suns writer who was adamant, like, no, 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 no. It's Dylan Brooks in the deal. Whereas, you know, Woj was like, no, 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 it's Marshawn Brooks. And it was just like, wait a minute. Did these guys really get confused on what Brooks is in the deal? Like, that really happened in 2018 where you don't know. And it came out that the Suns and Grizzlies had never communicated with each other. The Wizards were brokering as like a middleman. And it was just like, it was a complete disaster. Honestly, it was a complete mess. And even the first deal with Seldon going to the Suns and the Grizzlies would have won that deal. I think Kelly Oubre would have been a fantastic fit in Memphis. And then we'll talk about the Wizards trade that they eventually got, which still to me isn't a very good trade. But it was wild. I've never seen anything like that. And of course the deal flatlined and then they had to make a new deal the following day.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy that they couldn't communicate the message in this day and time of which Brooks was being traded. You know, obviously there's a big difference between Marshawn and Dylan. Marshawn's, you know, was drafted in the NBA a couple, like, I want to say almost 5 years ago, ended up playing overseas for a while, then came back last year. You know, he's kind of been an NBA journeyman. Then Dylan Brooks, obviously second year player, had a really nice rookie season. I think Memphis has high hopes for him. So getting those two guys confused is like different ends of the spectrum. You know, the potential for both of them is completely different. And just for it not to work out like that. And then, like you said, Corey, different guys were saying different things. You saw reports that Phoenix had already requested a physical for Dylan Brooks earlier in the week or his medical record. So I really don't know what to believe. Grizzlies came out and gave a statement saying it wasn't on their end and all this stuff. So just a really weird situation. But like you said, a trade eventually did happen. And that was Trevor Ariza going to the Washington Wizards for Kelly Oubre Jr. and Austin Rivers.
I mean, I like it for the Suns' perspective. Why not? Kelly Oubre's young. I'm pretty sure he's a restricted free agent, so now you get the rights to him if you want to match any offer sheet. And, I mean, so many wings on that roster now. I mean, guys, you're missing a point guard. Address the issue at hand. And I don't want to hear Austin Rivers is a point guard. We all know that he's a two-guard and a point guard body, and even still, he's been dreadful this year. And actually, Nick, I know I've mentioned this several times to you. Once again, another backup point guard that failed in Washington.
Yeah.
Every guy in 5 years they've tried to back up John Wall, and it didn't work. Backup point guards do not work out in Washington for whatever reason. And then Ariza, I mean, I know Chris Paul tweeted shaking my head after this deal happened. Ariza's back with Washington for his second stint. I don't get the move for Washington. It almost feels like they're trying to buy themselves time with Wall and Beal. Like, guys, don't give up on us yet. Look, we brought in a veteran wing in Trevor Ariza. And, you know, they're going all in, like competing for that 8 seed, I guess. I don't like it for Washington. I really don't even like it for Phoenix. But you had to trade Trevor Ariza because it just, you know, he's wasting away on a team that's got 5 wins or 4 wins. And then you get some young guy you can take a flyer on. But to me, it made no sense for Washington.
Yeah, it's like Washington is doing everything they can to try to stay in the playoff race and get that team back together. They're on a 4-game losing streak. And, you know, I think Bradley Beal or John Wall, one of the two, said, you know, he will help the locker room make guys seem more accountable. But I guess they weren't very high in Oubre. That's the only thing I could see why they didn't make this trade. He's a restricted free agent at the end of the year. Maybe they didn't want to pay him or they thought somebody was going to send a big offer sheet. I think Ariza will help them, but I don't know how much. I think the dysfunction is too big for one player to come and kind of solve all the issues. And like you said, on the Phoenix side, getting Oubre, getting another wing slash forward, whatever you want to call him, is definitely a nice plus. Austin Rivers, I'm not really sure how he's going to fit. He's somebody who can score the ball for you. But point guard's still a major issue there. And I think trying to develop all these wings, having a good point guard would make it so much easier. You know, I think this is a time where maybe you even go after a veteran. I think I was on Alex Golden's podcast, and I mentioned maybe Phoenix trading for Jeremy Lin, you know, as a one-year guy, a veteran that kind of just run the show and help you develop these players.
Yeah, I would love to see some kind of traditional point guard in Phoenix, and Jeremy Lin would definitely be that guy. It wouldn't be overly hard to acquire him.
Exactly. You know, you'll probably get him for a second round pick, I would think, or something along those lines. I think they just need some type of veteran to come in there that's capable of running the show day in and day out and kind of getting everybody in position, especially when you have so many young players, so many rookie, second, third year guys that you want to develop and take that next step, going from like a Josh Jackson, a Bridges, you know, an Ayton. Even Devin Booker could use some help having a point guard.
I will say, too, that I think this move for Kelly Oubre Jr. kind of solidified. I think TJ Warren might be the newest addition to possibly traded this deadline. We've mentioned him before. Not a terrible contract. I think he makes like $12 million a year. He's having a career year as well, I believe, shooting-wise.
He's starting to knock down the three ball too, which has obviously been the biggest issue with his game. If he can consistently do that, I think it makes him a lot more attractive.
Right, exactly. And I think because now, as we know, they have, what, four wings between Josh Jackson, TJ Warren, Bridges, and now Oubre Jr. They got four wings. You can play small ball. Oubre Jr. has played some of the four in Washington in the past. I know they tried Josh Jackson at the four too. But it feels like this team is actually gearing up to sell off more of these guys later in the year.
And considering their record, I think they still have the worst record in the league. You know, they do want to make some more moves. They want to get some more assets. And I think getting a guy like Oubre Jr. is not a bad deal because you get a full, you know, about a half a year to kind of look at his game, and then restricted free agency comes. And do you want to offer him a big deal, or do you want to let somebody else kind of send an offer sheet?
For sure.
What else do you expect from the Wizards side? Do you think this will help them? Do you think they'll get back in the playoff contention? We're going to talk about them a little bit later. They're only a couple games back from the eighth seed. Or do you think there's just too much dysfunction for that team to even make another step forward?
Nah, I just think I had this ongoing monologue in my head, which we all do because our minds think and talk out loud in our heads. But when this trade happened yesterday, I was making lunch. I just kind of like was digesting what this meant for Washington.
Literally and figuratively digesting the lunch and the trade.
I was really just thinking about how like this just feels like a buying time move to me. It doesn't feel like anything else. Like, yeah, Trevor Reese is a vet. He can definitely help the locker room, but that doesn't fix this team's issues. Like, not even close. Because realistically, you know, Trevor Ariza, bringing him in, Porter Jr. plays that role. So one of those guys is going to play the small ball four, and Porter Jr. still hasn't been impressive. You know, no Howard. The bench unit's still dreadful. It just, to me, you got rid of two guys who may have not been big parts of your future for a one-year rental that still doesn't help you add talent to get better. You know what I'm saying? It seemed like such a short-term move when there's no reason to be looking at the short-term because you're not having any success or a sustainable success. So for me, it just felt like they were trying to ease Wall and Beal. Be like, look, we're bringing in a vet, a guy who's won a championship. We know how a lot of the contending teams want him. He's definitely going to help. Let's try this before we get too drastic, because I still think getting drastic is the only move this team has.
Yeah, it's like maybe they took their last shot before they're like, all right, we need to blow it up. I think their lineup does improve getting Ariza in there, but I don't know how much it can really help them because it's more of a team problem. Trevor Ariza, you know, he's a great locker room guy. He's somewhat of a leader. He plays hard out there. But is he going to be able to get everybody on that team and improve them? Defensively, they're just terrible. They don't put much effort in. That center position, like you mentioned, Dwight being out really hurts them. They're starting Thomas Bryan. You know, they're going small ball in the second unit with Markieff Morris. So it's just like there's a lot of issues actually wrong with the team from a roster perspective. Bringing in Trevor Ariza is not going to solve all that. They do have a lot of talent still, but I'm not a huge fan of the move. I understand why they did it. It doesn't really make much sense, though. I think they would have been better off, you know, trying to move one of the bigger guys and going for that rebuild, which we've discussed in the past. And also just throwing out this note, this was a rumor out there, is the Wizards refused to include Kelly Oubre in a deal to the Clippers last year, which they could have acquired DeAndre Jordan.
That would have been but then again, you don't know if DeAndre Jordan resigns.
You would have had his bird rights, though, so you at least would have had the opportunity to sign him.
That would have been interesting because I think a Wall DeAndre Jordan pairing is really effective in the pick and roll.
And they played Toronto in the first round last year, and they didn't play bad. I mean, I think it was 2-2, and then Toronto kind of picked it up. Yeah, so DeAndre definitely could have made a big impact, and that would have been one of the best rim rollers that John Wall's been able to play with. Obviously, Gortat lost a step, lost some of that finishing ability. Swapping DeAndre in there would have helped offensively and defensively. Obviously, the rim protection has been pretty bad this season, so that was a major blow for them.
Yeah, not to mention, I mean, DeAndre Jordan in Dallas has been having a career year this year. Yeah, it's been fantastic for them.
And it would have almost just provided a different element to the team that they haven't had. And they're almost hoping Dwight would bring that. And obviously the whole Dwight thing hasn't worked out with the injury and stuff. So just another mistake in Washington. I think there's a long list of assets and things they've wasted where they've either traded first-round picks and they've turned into good players. I know they traded a first-round pick for Bojan Bogdanovic, only played a half a season there. That pick turned into Jared Allen. So not a ton of great trades for Washington in the past.
Turned out to be a good steal for the Pacers, though, that following offseason, tell you that.
Yeah, it did. And it's funny is they didn't even try to keep him. So it was just like, not really sure. I think, like you said, Corey, you pretty much hit on the head. They're so worried about the short term, they forget about long term things and building a roster and trying to be good for a long time instead of just trying to, you know, this season push for the playoffs, the other season's trying to push a little bit deeper.
I wouldn't be surprised because Ariza can be dealt again this year by the deadline, right?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, because he was traded on the first day of free agency. So I wouldn't even be surprised if we see Ariza dealt again by the deadline.
I think there's a possibility they still blow it up. You know, a lot of people have talked about how mad is Bradley Beal going to be? Is he going to demand a trade outright and just, you know, try to force his way out of there because of the way things are going? You know, it's we're unsure, but I could definitely see it. I think we could dive deeper into the Wizards and give them an entire podcast. But if I was them, I'd fire the front office, clean house, bring in somebody new, rebuild the team, and just move forward because, like we've talked about, this era just hasn't worked in Washington.
I agree. I'd fire everybody. Front office, head coach. I know some people are still on the side of Scott Brooks. I really don't think he's a good coach.
Even if he is, I don't think he's an ideal player development coach, and I think that's the avenue that you'd want to go. You know, you'd want to trade Beal. You'd want to trade Wall. You'd want to probably trade Porter, too, if you can move that contract, and then just kind of rebuild from there and just get a lot of draft picks and then bring in a guy who's known for developing players and kind of start new.
Especially when you already have your staff. You know, like Scott Brooks, and he got in that shouting match, right, with John Wall already.
Yeah.
And that's never a good look.
I think there's just too much negativity. It's like where you literally need to clean house and just bring everybody new and set a new vibe for the culture. Even just viewing the Wizards from an outside perspective, from a fan perspective, just like you don't necessarily think positive about them. But talking a little bit of Western Conference, Corey, so obviously the West has been crazy. You know, we've seen teams from 1 to 10 in a matter of days. Right now, what teams are you willing to lock into the Western Conference playoffs at this point in the season?
All right, so lock in teams. This is
Golden State. We can both agree on. We don't even have to mention them.
Right. It's the Warriors are a lock. I think OKC is a lock.
Yep.
I'm really buying in, especially with how Paul George has been playing. He's been fantastic.
Balling.
So I think those two are a lock.
He's been incredible.
Yeah. The Lakers, I think they're a lock. I'm going to still say the Nuggets are a lock, but I am slightly concerned with how far they could drop because of all the injuries that we talked about in the last show. But I think they're still a lock. And then the last team I can – that's it. That's it. Those four are the only teams I'm willing to put into a lock at this point in time. Because when you get to the five seed and down, I just think there's so much wiggle room. And we've already seen the Clippers lose three in a row, so maybe they're coming back down to earth a little bit. I'm not really – I can't lock in anybody else besides those four.
I 100% agree. I have Denver as a lock, Golden State, OKC, and LA, the Lakers. Then you look at where the Clippers are. They're fifth in the standings. Between fifth and 14th is only a four-game difference. And that in teams at the bottom we're looking at are teams like the Utah Jazz, the Houston Rockets, San Antonio, New Orleans, some teams that have been off the really rough starts or dealt with injuries where you could see them kind of jumping up in the standings. And I think you look at the Clippers, and yeah, they've been off to a really good start, you know, start in the season, but they've kind of dropped off, like you said, losing three straight. Dallas, you're kind of unsure about them. Memphis has dealt with some issues since the Dylan Brooks injury. Portland's kind of a wild card. You kind of have a feeling that they'll sneak into the playoffs, but you're not really sure. I think Sacramento's kind of fallen off a little bit. We didn't really expect them to make the playoffs. But New Orleans is a team I think you look at and you're like, all right, Alfred Payton comes back. They're probably going to be in the trade market. You could easily see them jumping back in. San Antonio hasn't been great this season. Their season could really go either way. I still actually have a little bit of faith in Houston just with the way James Harden is playing. He's going to have to put up crazy numbers from the get in the playoffs, but it's hard for me to be like a player of his caliber is not going to make it. And Utah, I'm a little worried about them. And Minnesota, I think people are calling for Tibbs to be fired on that four-game losing streak. So it's just like all across the West, there's all different storylines.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the Kings at 9 to the Timberwolves at 4, at 14th. Every single team in that span, Kings, Pelicans, Spurs, Rockets, Jazz, Timberwolves, they're all 5-5 in their last 10 games.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's just ridiculous. And there's no, you know, it's funny because I think last show, the show before, we were talking about how good the Timberwolves have been since the Jimmy Butler trade. And then this past week, as you mentioned, the calling for Tom Thibodeau to be fired, the team hasn't looked special. The Utah Jazz, I'm 100% with you. There's a lot of red flags for me on them.
I'm almost about to give up on the Jazz after watching them play Orlando yesterday in Mexico City. Obviously, that had a little impact with, you know, the travel and the international play, but I don't know. The Jazz's offense just seems really bad, and they just – I don't know what is wrong with them. I think they need a big trade.
I turned that game on at halftime.
It was bad.
It was 33-31 entering the third quarter. And I was
the
like,
first quarter was like 14-14.
I was like, are you shitting me? I was like, I'm watching an NBA game in 2018 where defense is not really allowed. And it's 34-31 or whatever it was in the third quarter. That's boring. I mean, I feel bad for Mexico City. That's the game we gave you. Yeah. We gave you that. The Jazz offense to me is just a huge question mark. And I'm with you on the Rockets. I know I think I called it out in the last show, the show before. I said I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. And I still feel that way. But if James Harden plays like the MVP that he was last season and arguably the season before, this team is going to be in the hunt because he's just incredible. But I worry about the guys around him because Chris Paul, to me, he just doesn't look good.
He seems to either have lost a step or he's injured or something.
Yeah.
Luckily, they got like Daniel House has been playing pretty well for them. I think they're a team that's going to look to make a trade or, you know, really could save their season if Eric Gordon starts to play well. He's been really rough, and I think he's mentioned not being happy and not having fun on the court. If they can kind of find a way to get him going, that would be a big plus.
I'd agree.
What are your thoughts on San Antonio? Like, what's up with them? They're just, like, all over the place. Like, one stretch, they look really good. Like, oh, they're going to make the playoffs. And the next stretch, they're losing the bad teams. They can't close out.
I think they're a prime example. I mean, the loss yesterday to the Bulls, that's a bad loss.
They blew a 21-point lead.
Yeah, it's a bad loss, especially because they had some momentum. I think they had won over the Lakers, over the Jazz, over the Suns. They just beat the Clippers, I think, by 40 on Thursday. And you're thinking, okay, maybe San Antonio's kind of figuring out because the Lakers win and the Clippers win. Those are good wins. And then last night, you know, everything's going right. And as you mentioned, they blow a 21-point lead to Chris Dunn.
He had a clutch bucket, though. That was pretty. That smooth bucket he hit in the end of that game. I was like, okay, Chris Dunn coming back from injury, starting to look nice.
And people were trolling him because I think he airballed a three in the first quarter. And people were like, man, the Chicago Bulls team. And then Chris Dunn gets the last laugh, of course. But I don't know. I think for the Spurs, the biggest issue is, you know, DeRozan's been really good, but he can't hit threes again. And they really needed DeRozan to be able to hit threes like he did last season because this team just doesn't have that kind of three-point shooting. LaMarcus Aldridge has been steady, but he's definitely taken a step back too, I think. It's just the role players. This is probably the worst role player team the Spurs have had. Because generally they have a good balance between the starting stars of their team and then the role players generally are above average role players. This is the first season where I just don't feel like they have that above average role player system.
Yeah, it's going to be something to keep an eye on. I know a couple Spurs fans who advocated maybe for a fake tank or like kind of a slight tank where they miss the playoffs, get another high draft pick, and then maybe they could bounce back with their dynasty. Or even this is a team that people have mentioned making a move for like a Markelle Fultz or something. So obviously going to be something to keep an eye on. Moving over to the Eastern Conference, I think the top of the East is pretty much set. We know Toronto, Milwaukee, Indiana, Philly, and Boston are all going to make the playoffs. It gets interesting at the 6-11 spot where you have Detroit, Charlotte, Orlando, Miami, Brooklyn, and Washington, all separated by four games. You know, Detroit with the best at 14-13 and Washington at the bottom at 11-18. Now, looking at these teams, Corey, which of them do you think is going to earn those last three spots in the Eastern Conference playoffs?
Well, see, the East right now is just before I get into that question, the East is in like a three-tier spot right now. So you got the tier one teams with the Raptors, Bucks, Pacers, Sixers, and Celtics. Then you have tier two, which is the Pistons, Hornets, Magic, Heat, Nets, and Wizards. I think that's tier two, and those are all the teams competing for a playoff spot. Then you have tier three, which is, you know, the dumpster fires, even though Knicks are probably the best dumpster fire of the dumpster fires because they at least play hard every single night for Fizdale. And Cavs too. Bulls, Hawks, no. so the last three playoff seeds between the Pistons, Hornets, Magic, Heat, Nets, Wizards. Crazy that your Nets are in the race still.
Yes, 8-game losing streak now bounced back to four.
With three of those wins being good wins, right? Sixers, Raptors, and who else?
They beat Sixers, Raptors, Knicks, and Wizards.
Okay, yeah. So two wins are really good, and the Wizards win is still decent because they're in the same tier. I think if I had to guess in the last three playoff spots, I would say Pistons, Hornets. I think the Pistons and Hornets are a lock. Do I think the Magic are for real as a playoff seed? No. Do I think the Miami Heat are good enough? No. I kind of want to say the Nets, but I feel like it's just – I can't let you get that satisfaction maybe.
I think the one thing for the Nets is that they're going to probably make the best acquisition out of all the teams because they're going to get Caris LeVert back.
Right, and I think they're deeper. I think they're a more complete basketball team depth-wise than the Magic and Heat at this point in time.
Yeah, no, I think like as low as I was, you know, like a week or two ago in the Nets with that 8-game losing streak, just blowing close wins or whatever you want to call it, they've almost grown from that streak. And obviously Spencer did when he recently signed his extension. He's playing out of his mind. In this 4-game winning streak, he's averaging over 27 points per game, 50% from the field. So he's been wild. And like I said, Caris LeVert coming back, Trevion Graham supposed to come back for them. I feel pretty good about the Nets having a chance to get in that 8 seed because, like you said, Orlando, I'm not willing to buy in on. Detroit, I think, will make the playoffs. Charlotte is still a little bit concerning. Like, I still think there's issue because you're putting so much pressure on Kemba Walker. You know, Jeremy Lamb's probably been their second best player, but who else in that team is really playing amazing that you're like, all right, Charlotte's definitely going to get in the postseason. I think that's another team I'm kind of concerned about, but I could see Washington, there is still some hope because they're so talented, but you know, the dysfunction I think is going to take over. You never know with Miami, but they've dealt with injuries and their just offense is kind of bad.
Yeah, I think the Hornets are a team that I would be completely shocked if we don't see some sort of move by them this year.
Yeah, I think they want to add. They've been kind of aggressive. They've been in the Bradley Beal talks. They made a calls for Jimmy Butler. I think they're really looking to add more talent.
Right, and I think they need to, especially with Kemba Walker being a free agent this upcoming offseason. He's been fantastic, as we know, even though he was terrible last night against the Lakers. I think you're looking at, if you're Hornets front office, you're looking, you know, we have to somehow make this roster somewhat better just so we can show Kemba we're trying to give him a team. But I agree, their current roster, it's got to be, you know, 80% Kemba for them to win games. And how much can you rely on that from Kemba for a full season? Because even through 29 games, they're only 14-15.
Exactly. And last night, you know, Lonzo Ball really shut him down and they got blown out of that game.
Tremendous defense by Lonzo. He was incredible last night.
And then I even think you could look at Detroit is in that when, you know, knock on wood, but they're one Blake injury from going on a long losing streak.
Even not even Blake, you know, even though I don't think Reggie Jackson is that impressive. They lose Reggie Jackson again, not having a point guard in the NBA. I just don't think it works. And I don't think that team in particular, because they have, you know, Blake Griffin and Andre Drummond, they really need a point guard. Even if it's just a Reggie Jackson more so of a scoring point guard, they need that kind of guy who can handle the ball. And they don't have that without Jackson in the lineup.
Now, talking a little bit of Orlando, do you think they're a team that's going to make a move to kind of boost their chances, or they're just going to kind of go with the flow, or they're going to look to move guys and get more assets?
I still think this is probably one of my fire sale teams in the NBA still, because they do have a lot of value assets at this point in time, and they're playing for nothing, realistically. You know, Evan Fournier, Vucevic, Jonathan Simmons,
Terrence Ross,
TJ Augustine. Those five guys, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw three of them dealt this year. They have decent role play. They got some guys who can really help a team that's trying to compete, you know, push their team to another level. And I just think if you're Orlando, why are you bothering playing for an 8 seed? I get it. Your franchise hasn't been winning a lot recently.
They haven't won since Dwight was there.
Right. So I understand it, but I think realistically you need to go full tank still. I think they've been dancing around it. Because the fact of the matter is they've added some nice young pieces in Mo Bamba and Jonathan Isaac. But as we've mentioned, this team still needs a point guard. So I wouldn't be surprised if they try to go all in on getting a Markelle Fultz just so they can add another young piece and then further solidify they may be tanking.
Yeah, they've been rumored to have interest in Fultz. I think that wouldn't be a terrible move. You know, I think point guard, even, you know, wing, like long-term help on the wing, like they have some guys that are good for now, but fitting the timeline of Bamba and Isaac, they still need to add some wings and guards.
Yeah.
But so your final picks, what are you putting in there, Corey? I got to put the pressure on. Obviously, we're going to do this again probably like 16 more times before the season ends. But
yeah. I think my final picks as of right now with how all the teams are playing would be the Pistons 6th, the Hornets 7th, and then the Nets squeaking as the 8th seed. You could even probably flip the Nets and Hornets maybe for the 7-8 because I think right around 500 this year is going to get you in the playoffs in the East.
So you guys heard it here first. Corey just boosted up his Christmas gift. But I honestly think that the Nets have a real shot at getting the 8th seed. I think Orlando is – is going to just go through one of these lapses. They did last year. Their talent on the team isn't amazing. And like you said, they could be active in the trade market. I like the momentum the Nets have in the player development and getting back Caris LeVert. If Caris LeVert is healthy, he was playing at an all-star type level before the injury, offensively and defensively. So that would be huge for the team. And also, I wouldn't completely sleep on Miami too, because they can just grind out wins. What was it, 2 years ago? They went completely like flipped the season around. What were they, like 11-30, and then they went 30-11 the second half of the season or something like that. So don't sleep on Miami either, because Spoelstra is a great coach.
Agreed.
Any final thoughts, Corey, before we get out of here?
No, I think we touched on everything pretty well.
Yeah, we so make sure you check out the show, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. As always, thank you for listening. Always a pleasure, Corey.
Peace out, knuckleheads.